Hello, I'm James Sandy, and welcome to this special edition of the New Curiosities Box, gathering a choice selection of arts and culture from Bee Festival 2019. In its 10th year, Birmingham European Festival creates an annual spectacular of cutting-edge dance, circus, and visual arts. A platform of world wonders cast creatively across the city stage. Based in its festival hub at the Birmingham Repertory Theatre and pulling in artists from across Europe and beyond, I set off for my third time in this show's history to get a backstage view of its challenging programme for 2019. Coming up, a sobering human snapshot of the realities of migration through performance and film, truthful stunts and ambitious deceptions with blunt objects and vintage sideshow, and a reassembled deconstruction of the legacy of punk through explosive dance and some pogo sticks. For an archive of over 30 shows to date, you can visit www.switchradio.co.uk/James Sandy. And for more Bee Festival links, go to www.beefestival.org. We start with Soul Seekers, a performance documentary looking at the very real and personal impacts of migration. I caught up with artist Mahalid Rasim for an insight into his exploration of hope and a snapshot of lives put on hold. Okay, well, I'm lucky to be here with Mahalid, and we're talking about Soul Seekers, which is a wonderful portrait of, I think, some quite intimate and personal situations. So, Mahalid, let's start with the kind of idea, the story, if you like.
Yes. Soul Seekers. I was 10 years ago in the refugee center. Also, I stayed there 6 months. I was also in the situation of waiting for paper. And after 10 years, I back to the refugee center. And I met a lot of people, and I just want to ask people how can create a new soul in this life. I ask people, where is your soul? Some people say, I don't know where is my soul. And some people say, I lost my soul. And some people say, my soul is in my country, of with my mother, of my soul is dead in the war. I find a lot of answers, but the history of this project is because a lot of people come to Europe with a different way. I mean, with the different situations. Some people because the war. Some people because the starting for a new life and like that, and I want to do searching about that. I go to the refugee center and I stay there 6 weeks, and I sleep with the people, I eat with the people, I play with the people, football of like that, and we speak about a lot of things in the life, and I don't like to speak about past life. I want to speak about how can I say, a future. But a lot of people want to speak about the past life. And I open like a gallery, like a room, and I painting a lot with the people, and I ask a lot of questions with the people about what means for you a new life. Some people can answer that, and some people cannot answer that. Because the people waiting for paper, people don't have a paper. Some people wait 3 years, 5 years, children, women, old man, a lot of people with a lot of patience there to waiting for paper.
Now, one thing that struck me when I was watching the performance was it does bring sharply into contrast the reality of those situations. I think the media and the news perhaps portray refugees in a particular way, almost without considering that it's something that could happen to anyone. And I think your stories really brought that home to me, certainly.
Yes, exactly what you say. It is. I was looking for the true stories of people over the souls, And what you say in the media, just you say refugee, to give a stimple to the people, refugee, refugee. But you know, if you see these people as like you, like me, like another people, people with like a doctor, of artist, a lot of different people, and just about human beings, you know, it's about how I look to you and how you look to me in this moment. Refugee in this moment is just because I don't have a country. Some people say I don't have a safe a place. I come here to be safe, and then I start my life. How I look to this, to the people like that. I just was very happy to meet these people, because for me is very important to bring the image and the voice of the people to the outside the world, to understand what is a human being, of what is human like that.
And there's a very nice, I think, analogy throughout the performance, which is about birds and about migration of birds, and how some birds, bigger birds, fly great distances and smaller birds don't, and some birds don't really move outside of a small area, and it's really nicely into the performance.
Yes, bird is a bird. I mean we cannot know the identity of the bird. I mean, we just look to the bird like a bird, a fly, and these people also fly to the another country, but we give to these people a frame, a refugee. But the bird, you don't give him frame. It is like, I am bird. And this is a different way we say, because the bird also go from country to the another country with a lot of people to enjoy the life, we say in Arabic. But these people has not go to the another country to enjoy the life, to discover a new life. Yeah, it's very important question about this bird for me. Is all the people in the refugee center is in the prison, in the, you know, prisons? Prison. Is a bird in the prison, like the how say in English, the
kind of clipped wings, in a cage.
Yes. Yeah. It is like destroyed now because don't have a paper. If you don't have paper, you cannot working. You cannot start for the school to learn the language. You cannot normally live in this reality if you don't have a paper. But I want for this project give energy for the people. I say you have imagination also. You can imagine that you have a paper. What do you do if you have paper? I mean, I give energy, I give patience to the people, because I was 5 years also without paper in Belgium. And after that, I get it everything. But I was, in these 5 years, I was very happy because I have a big imagination to live with my life.
Now, and there's another element in the piece that really interested me, which is this isn't a new story in the sense that there were references, there were images, pictures. So the Mona Lisa, for example, and bits of revolution and people escaping on a voyage or in a boat. So, you know, it's saying to people, I think, this isn't new. This has been happening for hundreds of years. But I think what was new about the piece was that it was a very open, true portrait of it. You know, very often films about migration or about refugees have an agenda, and I think your piece, perhaps the only agenda was openness.
Yes, exactly. These people was in Paris, these people was in Paris in the refugee center and go not outside. It was very sad, and don't see the outside world. The reality was very close for these people, and of one of the person of the in the refugee center say, I want to see Mona Lisa. I hear a lot of about the I remember Mona Lisa is the most beautiful woman, And I want, and I told him, here you can see the Mona Lisa. And Mona Lisa, he said, I want to see that. I said, okay, we go to the to the Louvre Museum, and he's there. And he make contact with the Mona Lisa. He said, maybe Mona Lisa go to find for me the paper, the way. He make like a story also with the Mona Lisa, dialogue.
Yeah.
Because nobody can find for him
the solution
yeah. of paper of yeah. the situation is very complex, and he start to make a very happy story with Mona Lisa. For me, is really about when you go to the museum of the culture things, people look to you like a normal person, and everybody look to him like a visitor.
Yeah, so, it's very democratizing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, like a person come to see art.
Yeah,
but when you put him in the refugee center, look people to him like a refugee, and people very, how can I say, very so scared. Yeah,
so reluctant.
Yeah,
reserved. Yeah,
it is like a little fear. Like.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand that also, but I want to bring him in the situation where he's feel, I am like everybody. I come from Sudan, of Somalia, of I don't know, to see Mona Lisa. And he feel very happy in this moment. And I say, this is the life what I want. And this is what I want to tell this story about. We just to give a normal life.
So far, where have you taken the performance? Where have you been? Where has it played?
Where
has it just played here? Has it played in other places?
This
performance.
Yeah, this places in Spain and in Africa, in Paris, also in Belgium a lot, in Holland, and Germany also, and different countries.
What's been the response? How have people responded?
People is really like you when you say the true story. We never see that, and people was very happy to see that. And also, we make a discussion after the performance about how you make this, how people speaking today after also when you eat here in the Bee Festival. You in the table to eat and discussion with people. Also, people was asking about how be openly for you these people in the refugee center, for example. I say you give time. We need time to open the mentality. We need time to open the soul for the another people.
I think just finally, one thing that really struck me as well about the work was this concept of family. And you've touched on it already, which is, you know, families create themselves out of circumstance, don't they? They're kind of, you know, there are families outside of your sort of birth family, aren't there?
You mean the last part when people living in the family home?
Yeah.
This is what you mean?
Well, so in the piece, in the video, there's a very nice piece where a number of the guys in the refuge or in the kind of host houses are talking about each other as family.
Yeah. This is one of the most things for me. In this village, whole the family of the village opened the door for the refugee. I believe you have a lot of good people in the life to can listen, to can open the door, to can be family if somebody don't have a family. A lot of people don't have father, he say, this is my father. A lot of people don't have mother, she say, my mother, my sister, my brother. And I was really so happy to see how people get these people in the home, like one of the family. And the refugee don't want to go out the home because feel really safe with this family was, this was in Valenciennes in French, in French. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic to see that. I was so happy because I believe and we can live together.
Excellent. Well, I think it was a really inspiring piece, so congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to the New Curiosities Box with me, James Sandy, and a special show capturing this year's Bee Festival 2019. Someone Loves You Drive With Care sees last year's first prize Bee Festival winner Tom Kasani explore truth, lies, deception and boundaries through stunts, trickery and danger. I spoke to Tom and his right-hand man Pedder backstage to try and get to the truth.
Okay, so I'm backstage excitingly at the Rep in the green room. It sounds very showbiz, and it is really quite showbiz, which is good. And I'm with Tom Kasani and Pedder
Kirk.
Pedder Kirk.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to write those down later just so I don't forget. But I've got a recording anyway, so.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk about you and your show. Because a lot of the kind of blurb or the sort of write-up tells me that you're a liar. Okay, so are you a liar? And you've got to, I've got to think about how you answer that question.
Yes, yeah, but I'm honest about it.
An honest liar.
In some ways. I mean, at least I tell you that that's what I'm going to do.
Now, in this age, that's quite an interesting thing to be, isn't it? An honest liar, because we do live in strange times.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's a way of telling you exactly what I'm doing or trying to do on stage without giving too much away. So at least sort of giving you some agency in the lie that I'm going to be spinning when you come and see the show.
So there's an air of illusion about your show, isn't there, I think? Is that fair to say?
There's illusory aspects, yes. Not just in what I do on stage physically, but both in what I say and the way in which I've combined the things that I do on stage with the things that I say. There's illusion in multiple aspects of the show, not just sort of in a traditional magical way.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about the show and the kind of how that's developed and where that's come from. Did you get struck by lightning or creative thunderbolts or something?
Well, there's a lot of lightning in the show.
Wow.
Because of course that's where glass comes from.
Indeed.
It wasn't invented, it was lightning hitting a beach and creating glass.
So folks listening at home, just give a flavour of what the show looks like.
You've got 5 metres of broken glass in a diagonal across the centre of the stage. You've got some metal buckets. You've got a table with a black box. Yes. And
some blowtorches.
Yeah.
It sounds like the perfect ingredients for a sort of family afternoon at home.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, of course.
And we also talk about domestic incidents.
Yeah. Spontaneous human combustion.
Which is very appropriate with that T-shirt, actually.
That does happen,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes.
It does happen, yeah.
Reputedly.
One of the most recent cases of it happening happened about a mile away from my house last year in North London. An elderly man burst into flames on the street. And there was no evidence of any accelerant. So it does happen, yeah.
Wow. So we should reference the T-shirt I'm wearing is a Wish You Were Here T-shirt, a Pink Floyd album of many decades ago, which famously has a man on fire shaking another man's hand. And I always thought that image was sort of filtered or made up afterwards, but I've since seen the footage from the photo shoot where a stuntman is set on fire. So he's probably as brave as you folks are. So there is an aspect of bravery, isn't there, to what you do, I think.
I wouldn't say bravery, but I'd say there's definitely, I'm challenging myself, I suppose, and I find ways of building in actions and physical routines into the shows I do that mean that they challenge me each night and they keep me on my toes and keep me sort of live and present in the room with the audience. So I suppose bravery maybe in some ways is that, but I would say
it's calculated risk.
Yeah,
you know, the audience shouldn't be deeply concerned that Tom is going to damage himself, but they should be aware that there's risk involved and that risk is overcome by practice and skill.
Yeah, and that there's an invitation to witness and be part of that, and also to interrogate that as a process and as a show itself, and not just sort of me showing off the things I've learned how to do at home, you know.
I think one thing that's being questioned is, why might we consider somebody to be special? What might the values really be that makes them special and different from other people? And we want to question that.
So how do audiences respond to your performance? Is there an element of a kind of firework display, the kind of, ooh, ah, that kind of noise?
For the person that sits in the rehearsal room and watches Tom do stuff, because I'm kind of outside eye type person, it's really strange because I kind of get so used to it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, it's walking on the glass again. Yeah. And it's suddenly...
And then we do it in front of other people and everyone sort of doesn't really know how to take it. Sometimes there's laughter because it's really, people don't really know what else to do with what they're seeing. Sometimes it's sort of... It's squeamishness, but often we try to do things so that it's not just... It's not there to shock or horrify people. It's these things like walking on glass have a place within the world of the show. So there is an element of sort of shock and, I suppose, wonder, but there's not... No one's horrified or disgusted in that way, but...
But it's the point where it's something that's shocking, it's challenging, but also beautiful.
Yes, yeah. There's definitely a sort of a quality to the stuff that we really tried to tease out that creates, an image.
And in a way, that reaction's the most important thing, isn't it? The audience reaction, in terms of how it makes people feel about themselves once they're kind of witnessing what's before them.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think you always hope that what you do in a performance is let an audience feel. That so much of the time now we're not feeling, we're not in contact with texture. And what performance can do is bring you back to yourself and your bodily experience.
And to remind you, that's a person on the stage. It's one of us and I'm one of them. And all the materials used in the show are domestic in many ways. Broken glass, a bucket, you know, a blowtorch. Maybe not everyone's got a blowtorch in their kitchen, but you know, they're objects that we all kind of know how everyone knows how they work and what they are and have seen one in real life. So using those kinds of things really is one way of sort of allowing people to know what an experience, what I'm doing and going through.
And that thing about reminding people, a lot of the show deals with memory. What do we remember? How do we remember? How much do we trust that? When I tell you something that happened to me in the past, I believe I'm telling you the truth. Mm. But am I? Is that a lie?
How about your kind of working relationship, as it were? There's a sense to me that it's a bit like Batman and Alfred the Butler. You know, it's that kind of thing, you know? You've got someone...
You like your lobster.
Sure.
You've got someone...
Alive.
Kind of, almost sort of behind the scene, you know. It struck me when you said about sort of memory and what people want to believe and how they want to believe it. But I guess, you know, trust is key, isn't it, in terms of this... You said managed risk as a sort of concept. But you've really got to trust each other and a kind of and have confidence in the performance, haven't you? But, you know, sort of mutually, I guess.
I mean it's very much a trust of sort of, well, I'll just go off and learn how to do something just because I want to, and then I'll show up, you know, Pedder will show up at my house one day and I'll go, hey, I've learned how to do this, and then just show it to him, and Pedder will trust that I know what I'm doing and that I've practiced it enough, and then I trust that Pedder will be able to go, okay, so you've learned how to do that, right, but how is it relevant and how can it find its way into a piece in an important way? And, you know, I trust that Pedder can see sort of beyond the mad thing that I'm showing him and kind of go, okay, he knows why I've chosen to learn how to do this stuff and can see beyond it, or see the sort of the visual realm that I'm kind of aiming for, or even if I can't quite see it myself, Pedder helps me.
And it's that sense that, as well as Tom's, you know, I'll come round and I'll see something amazing, but also Tom's been working on texts, so those are shared and we start to sift and select, and think about, okay, what, which one of those texts that were never written to go with that effect might sit alongside it so that both of them become stronger. It's not that we set out to go, right, let's make a show about walking on glass. It's that that's something that's in play along with other things. There are texts in play, and where do we find a way that those resonate together for us, for an audience, and pull them into a world. So part of the aim, I think, with this show is we talked a lot about the rhythms that hypnotists or preachers might use. So there's an attempt to pull people into this other world with us.
And are there things, I imagine the postman's probably knocked on the door a few times and looked in and seen you sort of juggling blowtorches or throwing glass at each other or whatever, but are there things that you've ruled out or things that you thought perhaps, you know, that the risk's not worth taking, or perhaps ones you can't manage, or does it not work that way?
I mean, I can't remember because there's so many things that I kind of feel like going through my brain all the time, that there's things that we thought could fit into this show but then we dropped because they were relevant at one point tenuously and then no longer became relevant, like crying glass coming out of my eyes. And, you know, it's a nice image, but it just didn't find its way into the show. So we've ruled things out, maybe not so much because they're too dangerous, but because they don't work, or they don't belong yet. So there's lots of things in sort of, you know, that I'll be trying out that I'm learning at the moment.
Yes.
Which is horrifying for Pedro, but exciting for me.
I got to be the first person that witnessed live.
Yeah. A look of slight worry there.
Yeah. And
I sit there with my hands over my eyes.
Oh, okay.
But, like, you know, who knows that? I'm not going to say what it is, but that might not be in a show for another 2 years, for example. So it's not like things are ruled out, but there's stages. I don't just go full headfirst into doing one mad thing and then chuck it into a show. Some of the stuff in this show I've been doing for years, it's just found its place now, if that makes sense.
So without giving too much away, and let's talk a little bit about the yet, and just to finish, I'm just keen to know what you're brewing next, because I know artists are always sort of thinking, and they're performing, you know, one day, and coming up with the next big thing in the evening. You know, again, like Batman, there's always a secret after dark, isn't there? So what are you up to next?
As far as stunts and things goes, I mean, I've returned to playing cards and coins recently, in a kind of more studious way than I have before. They've always been a sort of squeeze ball. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of made a return back to sort of some of my magical roots. So that's something that might be something. But I suppose there's also lots of text that were written along the way, or found text along the way of the process of making the show, that were dropped at a very early stage because they were in a different tone and were about different stuff but came from a similar world. And I'm interested in the idea of durational illusions or durational magic or a trick or an illusion that is only becomes its illusory over a long period of time. So I'm interested in taking some of the performance stuff and texts that I've kind of that have dropped off along the way, edges along the way, and kind of somehow shaping that into maybe a durational piece. But I mean, that's all I'd say at the moment.
And I think it's not that purposeful. You're not going, right, we're going to make the next show and it's going to be this. It actually very often tends to come out of the bit that you go, oh, that doesn't fit in this show. Don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
And it keeps bothering you, and you keep going back to it and going, there must be something in that. And suddenly, one day, it just unlocks, and you go, yes, okay, let's take it in this direction.
And then you write another 30 pages off the back of that, and then show that to Pedder, and then Pedder goes, okay, Tom, right, let's have a look at this. And then, you know, shaves off about half of it. And I mean that in the best way possible. But yeah, that's what happens.
For now, Tom and Pedder, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Cheers. And finally,
Punk is a dance music performance assault that forces us to reconsider the place of safety pins and Mohicans in a modern setting. I sat down with stage director and creator Paola Rosalyn and other cast members to try and make some sense of it all.
Okay, right. I'm on a comfortable sofa and I'm with Paola, who you've just been part of a very energetic dance performance called Punk, but with a question mark and an exclamation
it's
mark.
It's called Interabang.
See, I don't understand that already. But so tell me about that, because that fools people.
Yeah, because it's questioning a little bit the origin of punk. It's following a little bit the history and putting also an emphasis on the energetic point of view of punk. So it's the mixture and the result of both the question and the exclamation mark, but it's also historically is where this interbank, more or less the time frame is more or less when it comes from. So yeah, just to decide to put up like this exactly this symbol, which has been a little bit from the history rejected. So it's not in part of what we usually use for signs, let's say.
So the performance, I think, was kind of mesmerizing. I was sitting there thinking, wow, what's going on here? What's going to happen next? You know, it was very bright and very heavy on the senses. I was kind of thinking, oh, you know, how should I respond to this? And it got me thinking as to whether this was a sort of celebration of punk, or, as you said, it's kind of, there's a question about what punk was, but whether it was sort of, in some ways, a goodbye to punk, I don't know.
Yeah, it tries to follow like a little bit of a historical timeline from the origins of punk, like proto-punk to punk to post-punk new wave and to techno, so just see how those things connect to each other. This is this is pretty much and try to find a bodily reaction to what punk means, and also because culturally, in different cultures, let's say, punk has a very particular meaning. Born and raised in Argentina, we have a very particular with Talking Heads and Ramones, and which were really really popular there, and like we grew up listening to those songs and so on. But in every culture there's different responses also, so how, and punk is also about energy, so we try to reflect on those kind of things and also relate to my previous work in terms that there is always a sort of analytical point of view of taking a well-known topic that everybody knows, like aerobics or like puppetry or punk, and try to dig into the topic from its different perspectives and try to collect material and make a performance out of it. So basically, there's always the other side of the coin, what people do not see. Like so it's trying to research on that part of, yeah.
Now, how difficult was it to translate something like punk, which is quite chaotic and unstructured? How difficult was that to translate to sort of dance and movement performance?
It was very challenging to find a dramaturgy in a way, and therefore we tried to orientate with a little bit of a historical point of view, or an hour feeling. How, of course, it was not one to one, and maybe Nico can tell you and Nikki a little bit how we develop with the music a sort of kind of continue breaking, or like breaking what it was before, and changes and continuation, and this was what it was carrying us a little bit to find, and the music was actually developed together during the process. So we work, we start developing things on the distance, that sending stuff, but then 3 weeks we work actually together and we developed the show together. On that, and so it was a ping pong, you know, like you throw a ball and then it's like a comeback with a different reaction. So,
well, Nico, let's ask you, because you were frantically playing away at the drums, and I know that drummers are always in charge Do you know? They always got the rhythm, you know? So they're always in charge of the music.
You got a big power.
That's what I've been told anyway. So coming up with sort of original punk pieces, how difficult was that?
Yeah, we got some points from Paula, how she had this idea of historical development a bit, and then the first thing, when she told us about the topic, I immediately start to produce a little bit music on at home, and Nikki also, and we sent her, and she liked the stuff that we did, and it was not I never listened a lot of punk music. I'm more a jazz musician actually, and I was always a little bit smiling to like punk. Yeah, okay, it's just people that cannot play the instruments, you know. But of course during the time I discovered that it's a bit more than that only, and then also mostly also during the time that we wrote the music for the piece and that we were together, and Paula said, "Hey, listen to that," and she came always with a lot of ideas, or Iggy Pop. I never listened so much to Iggy Pop, and then suddenly that was there, and then yeah, we let this influence ourselves, and me and Nikki, we jammed a lot also, and out of this came a mix of what we like and what we did, and the influences of what punk.
I guess there's a link really, isn't there, if you think about jazz and punk, they're both very fluid.
Yeah, but they're also,
and they're both about the performance, I guess, aren't they?
And they are both very free, you know,
yeah.
Because the jazz is super free and the punk is also free because they do what they need to kick out, you know, and the energy is the same, and it's both kind of a revolutionary music, you know, from the blacks in the past and from the punks in the 80s.
And were there particular, in terms of the music, were there particular, you mentioned some of the bands that sort of, you perhaps grew up with listening, but were there particular bands or artists that you wanted to sort of echo in the performance? So, I mean, I at least saw a bit of Ian Curtis at one point, I think.
We for instance, there is one solo that we did for actually that was choreographed for one of the dancers, the blonde dancer. Actually, it's based on movements from different female punk singers.
Yeah.
And out of bits of different movement styles and movements that they have been produced during concerts. And then, I kind of put that together with suggestions from the dancer and images or videos, and this is how it emerged. That is only is about to sing, but it never sings, and it's kind of that's about to, but it never happens. So coming back also to the music, that what Nico and Nikki were saying that they brought their own perspective, because it was not about reproducing what was already done, but it's always creating something new. So it's not about we being suddenly a punk band, but kind of giving our own approach to what it is or what it could be now. So it's kind of bringing those things back to life, and yeah, punk is not that, no. It's kind of, it's still there, and
there's a trace of punk, isn't there, in a lot of music now.
Exactly,
you can hear it now.
And this was the point, because after punk, nothing has been the same. How it got influenced and blend and change other styles, or you know, like punk was historically, let's say, very short in its life. Or like when Sex Pistols, you know, start calling punk. That was it. Punk was over.
Yeah.
Anyway, like, but then what? All the things that had came afterwards, they got really this influence to go somewhere else.
I want to ask Douglas a question, if I may, if I can drag him over here. It's a question about pogo sticks, okay? Uh-huh. So for listeners at home, there are a number of pogo sticks in the performance. And at one point, I thought you were going to explode on your pogo stick.
Uh-huh.
So how easy is it to use a pogo stick as a performer?
It's not super easy. One thing you can't do is control the direction of them. Well, I can't anyway. But there are people that do a lot more on pogo sticks than what we do.
And was this your first pogo? Had you been on a pogo stick before, or?
I seem to remember doing it when I was a child.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure we had them. I don't know when they were around, but no, when they were in the 70s, like the late 70s, early 80s.
I guess so. I mean, they're not the most comfortable form of transport, are they?
No. No. Not at all.
But as a dancer, but more seriously, as a dancer, it's difficult, I guess, to work with.
I think it's depending on the people, no? For him, it was difficult. For other people, like...
Yeah.
Like, for me, it took me a couple of, you know, training to be able to jump more than 5 times.
Yeah.
You know, like, really? I could not do it at the beginning.
Is it difficult to kind of work in, I suppose, what are very unnatural things, like a pogo stick, to kind of very natural movement, is it?
It requires a little bit of...
Yeah, I mean, it requires work, but I think what's interesting is that it, you know, as dancers, we're also focused on controlling our movements or creating specific ways to move or speeds or all this stuff.
Yeah.
And you can't do that with the pogo. So the pogo becomes a sort of driver of the rhythm, of the musicality.
The direction,
yeah. Yeah, and then also just watching someone bounce up and down on the pogo stick is really bizarre and actually super interesting. Like, when we as a group are dancing or bouncing around, it's, you know, we're still doing choreography, really, you know, like shapes in space, and we're all connecting and doing things, but it's this odd inability to master this thing that sort of pushes us to sort of...
There was also a bit, I think, about... For me, I was kind of watching it thinking, you became quite mechanized. You became like an engine when you were on those pogo sticks. You know, we kind of, sort of subconsciously, you were kind of all, work, you know, kind of opposing and, you know, working as a force, which I thought was quite an interesting angle.
Yeah, in a way, it was kind of the beginning that it was... first emerged, and then it gets kind of put into a certain shape, and then it just kind of, okay, it punk is like that, and then it kind of like goes apart.
Yeah.
So it's kind of reflecting a little bit, therefore, yeah, we jump together, and it also has, you know, like the idea of bringing the pogo stick. So we were once speaking also with Juan about that. I was like, oh, do you know that? I was like, oh, wow, yeah, it's true. And then suddenly it just arrived into the piece. And because actually, funny enough, it's called pogo, but it's not pogo. Pogo is not from pogo, then pogo dancing.
No.
But it's from Pole and Goldschart. It's like from a German thing from the 20s, something like that.
Learn something every day, don't you?
Yeah. So
I thought it was from the thing.
Nothing to do. So we don't know if that pogo dancing take it from pogo, like pogo stick.
Let's ask Nikki a question, which is partly about your shorts. You had a fabulous pair of shorts on during a performance, which I think were a nod to Angus Young, were they? Of AC/DC. Maybe. Oh, maybe
no.
Not. Okay.
No, they're just shorts that I traded with a friend, actually, a few years ago. And I was wearing them to rehearsals when we were producing the piece last year, and I think Paula was like,
those will do. Now, one of the things you did throughout was made a lot of noise. Now, that's a good thing, because you had, I think, a number of sort of technical gizmos that punks would never have had. You know, a lot of punks just had a guitar or even a bit of a guitar to make a noise. But you had quite a sound stage, so you kind of, was technology sort of part of the sounds? Did it help sort of invent new punk things?
Yeah, I think, we tried to go through different, like, styles of punk. So, yeah, to have just, like, had a guitar and an amp, I think would have made it a bit, would have left out all of the, like, kind of electronic stuff and the wavy stuff, and also my background is more coming from like synthesizers and electronics, so
we like it more.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And I thought it was interesting to figure out how to make, because like for me, I didn't grow up listening to punk at all, so for me it was interesting to figure out how to, what my approach to this kind of music was.
As we didn't work anyone together, I brought them together. So they didn't work together also before. So
they look like they're getting on together, which is good.
Yeah.
You know, they're getting on.
They're learning how to get.
So just finally, what's next? What are you up to next? Where do you take the show next?
Don't ask me now.
I know you're still recharging from tonight's performance.
No.
You're going on a short German tour at the beginning of next year with this production.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, and then you're going into a new production.
Ah, yes, yeah, exactly. Thank you. Thank you.
It's all planned out, yes.
There's a, it's a, yeah, we're working together also. But on the 31st of January 2020, it's a new production coming, which is called Flags.
Excellent. Well, thank you all very much for your time. Great to talk to you all. Really enjoyed the performance.
Thank you so much for being there.
And wherever you go next, I wish you all the best, as they say.
Thank you.
So thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And now it's time to close the box. My thanks to Mahalid, Tom and Paola and the team at the Birmingham Repertory Theatre. Bee Festival is an Arts Council England national portfolio organisation and is supported by the Baron Davenport's charity and the Norton Foundation. For more information, go to www.beefestival.org. The New Curiosities Box is written and presented by me, James Sandy, and is a King of the Buttons production for 107.5 Switch Radio.